Real life stories of real life men. These are the many voices of the Brothers in Blue Reentry Program. Real voices. Welcome to this week's edition of Real Voices. This recording is one inmate sitting down to interview his fellow inmate. Ask our frank questions in want of real answers. Nothing sugarcoated, but at essence, real dialogue in hopes of glimpsing a moment in the life of one. His reality, his life, right or wrong, his story. This recording is meant for mature audiences only. The only editing done to this recording was to clarify statements or omit extraneous information that didn't serve the purpose of this recording, which is simply to offer vignettes of a life. Thank you for listening to Real Voices.
My ex-wife and her friends were at a bar. It's more like a club, I guess. And she got into it with the guy, and he socked her. And she called me. I was drunk with my homeboys. So we went up to the bar and met him. Got him outside, beat him up. And I pulled a pistol on him and told him if he ever touched my wife again, I'd shoot him.
You originally got probation for that?
Yep.
And what happened there?
I got 2 years of ISP. I was about to get off my ISP, actually, when I caught the registration case. I was a year into it. I never missed a meeting, never failed a drug test or anything. He told me I just need to pay off my restitution, and he signed to let me off. So I was doing that, and then I caught the registration violation on the technicality.
What was that technicality?
That I had failed to return the paperwork to them within 10 days.
Okay, so let's think about this. Our inmate this week acts in a way that, in his mind, is simply defending the honor of his wife. Granted, it may have been excessive, but in principle, his intentions were pure, right? I mean, the Bible does say eye for an eye. No, we all know violence only begets more violence. You can't fight fire with fire, and other cliches that essentially teach that it doesn't matter who started it, wrong is still wrong. So our inmate found himself on ISP, which translates to intensely supervised probation, but failed his probation based on not returning registration paperwork within 10 days. That's all it took for our inmate to find himself on the way to prison for the next decade. 10 days turned into 10 years and a whole new life. Let's take a minute to step back and get to know who exactly this inmate really is.
Tell me about your childhood, your family.
I have two brothers and two sisters. I'm the middle sibling of five. My older sister went to UConn. My older brother went to Indiana. I went to Johnson County. My little brother, he dropped out. My little sister, I think she goes to KU. I don't know. I haven't talked to her for a while.
With your two older siblings achieving so much, did that add to any kind of pressure for you?
I put on a lot of pressure because every teacher I had, they had them the year before that or the year before that. So they always expected high hopes and high expectations from me. So it added quite a bit of pressure.
Did you feel difficulty meeting those expectations?
No, it was more of the fact that they wanted me to exceed what my brothers and sisters did. So I met their expectations, but I never exceeded because I didn't want to.
All right, so how about your parents?
Let's see. My dad, he grew up in Topeka. My mom's from New Jersey. My mom passed away in 2005. Last time I talked, my dad was living in Lawrence. I haven't talked to him for a few months now. I spent more time outside than I did inside. I spent more time at my friend's house than I did at my house. We weren't really like a lovey-dovey type family. We weren't always, oh, I love you and this and that. It wasn't like that. It was more of go clean the room, go clean your room, or go clean the living room, or, you know, stuff like that. It wasn't always hugs and kisses. It wasn't like that.
Right. But did they at least show affection? Did you know that they...
Yeah, I mean, you know, you always know your parents love you, but I was kind of the black sheep. I was always the one getting in trouble and doing stupid things, so I got to see more of the angry side than I did the loving side. My mom worked a lot, so she was really wasn't always there. My dad, he was there more than my mom, but, you know, tough love is tough love.
So he wasn't comforting?
No, he wasn't cuddling or, you know, making sure we were tucked in at night. It was more get your to bed.
Did you have any kind of role model when you were younger that you looked up to?
Not really. I can't say I did.
So our inmate convinced himself that he didn't want to compete against his siblings or potentially outdo them. His distant relationship with his parents and the constant comparison with older siblings seemed to cause him to pigeonhole himself as an apathetic troublemaker. His dad wasn't there to affirm him, so he convinced himself that he wasn't able to achieve success, and so he detached himself from goals or dreams. He couldn't be disappointed if he didn't care. So how did this translate into his later teen years?
I did pretty well in high school. I just squeaked by, I guess. I did pretty good, though. I mean, I start with National Honor Society, who's who among American high school students. Just after a while, I just stopped caring and just did what I needed to do to get by.
What was it that you wanted to do?
I have no idea. Have fun. Yeah. I didn't really plan for the future, you know, in high school. I just more or less wanted to go out, smoke weed, get drunk.
Do you think that boredom, it's fair to say, is part of your downfall?
No, I'd say more or less drinking was more part of, was the whole part of that. That was
okay,
the downfall.
But then the question is, why do you drink?
Why did I drink? Because I like to go out and have fun.
Okay, and you
don't
feel like...
I like to go to bars. I don't like drinking at my house. I go out and have fun.
Right. But do you not feel like you can have fun sober?
I can, but it's a different type of fun.
Our inmate started drinking, and drinking heavily, because he liked to have fun. It wasn't because he had undervalued his own potential or because he was empty. It was just for fun. I apologize if my sarcasm had a little bit of bite to it, but it's easy to blame the alcohol. But why did our inmate feel the need to drink? Without a purpose or dream in life, temperance is extremely easy to write off. Deferred gratification becomes completely out of the question, which often leads to substance abuse and impulsive decisions. For example, crime, for one. And also, having kids out of wedlock.
You have kids, right?
Yeah, I have two.
Two kids, and both girls?
Yep.
How old?
One will be turning 6 in September, the other one will be turning 2 in August. My oldest daughter, I don't know, I mean, me and her mom, right after she was born, me and her grandma got into it. It was right when she was born, her mom was still in the hospital, and, they said only one person could spend the night, and I told her I'm not leaving. It's my daughter, so you gotta do what you gotta do, but I'm not leaving. So she tried to keep me away from her as much as possible. Her mom would sneak her around to come see me and everything, but we spent time together, but we didn't really spend all that much time together. I mean, I babysat her for a couple months last time I seen her, but it's been about 3 years, going on 4 years now.
Okay, and what about your younger daughter?
Never seen her. She was born since I've been locked up.
Okay. And how does that make you feel?
Kind of sad. You know, I'd like to spend time with her. I'd like to see her, but her mom doesn't want to bring her to this type of place. So, I mean, I understand that.
Right. Do you still keep in contact with her?
I send her cards and letters, but I haven't talked to her since I got here. Their mom controls everything that happens in their lives, so I can send letters and send cards and call all I want. It's up to them to give it to them.
Yeah, it only means so much in their eyes, right?
I mean, if they don't give it to them, they don't give it to them. They throw it away, they throw it away. They don't answer the phone, they don't answer it. I can't, you know, there's only so much I can do. I feel that I should be part of their life, but I mean, there's only so much I can do about that. I can't, you know, go out there and play with them, you know, I'm locked up. Their mom has pretty much 100% control of what happens.
There are two ways to look at our inmate's outlook toward his daughters. One, he's being realistic and accepting the situation for what it is. Or two, he's defeating himself and once again shielding himself from the pain or disappointment by writing it off as, it is what it is. You can draw your own conclusion, but as far as being an objective narrator, I think objectivity has went out the window a while ago. But how can he open himself up to optimism when he's right about his helplessness in the situation? Maybe his route is the safest one, but is it the right one in the long run? Finally, there's a question that I don't have some pretentious answer for. He's in prison, and it does undoubtedly isolate him from his past.
Currently, I'm in here on a probation violation for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, offender registration violation, and attempted criminal threat. I was already in jail on a DUI, so I caught two DUIs within 3 weeks of each other. So the second DUI, the judge gave me a $100,000 bond on. So I bonded out on an ag battery case, because I caught my first DUI, then I caught an ag battery case, and I caught the second DUI. Bonded out on the first DUI, bonded out on the ag battery case.
This is all while you're on
ISP? This is all within a month, yeah.
This is all while you're on ISP?
Yeah.
So you were already in county then?
Yeah.
And then they decided to revoke your ISP?
No, they waited about 3 months on that. They came up and questioned me about the registration case at the beginning. I got caught the DUI at the end of March. They came at the beginning of April and questioned me about the registration. I mean, I told them exactly what I was. I don't know what you're talking about. I was living there at the time. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. And he said, well, are you going to talk to me about it? We really don't have anything else to talk about. So he said that, okay, well, I'm just going to charge you with 3 counts of offender registration violation. I said, okay, well, you do what you have to do. Then that was the end of the interview. Originally, I was looking at 23 years on that.
Wow.
But that was if the judge actually ran every charge consecutive.
Right.
But he ended up dismissing 3 of the 4 charges when I went to trial.
It seems like when I was going through trial, he more or less wanted to just drop the whole case. But he wasn't going to because we had already picked the jury, so he figured he might as well just go through it.
It went pretty well. The first day, I think actually if my judge or my lawyer would have told him that he wanted to ask to have the trial dismissed, you know, based on lack of evidence, I think he probably could have got it done right then, but he proceeded to keep going for the next. It lasted 2 days. I got found guilty.
So overall, you got how many months?
152.
152 months. At what age?
I was, 25 when I got sentenced.
So that kind of, a little bit of an eye-opener, wasn't it?
Yeah, 25 was a bad year.
Yeah,
25 was a bad age for me.
And so now the plot thickens. He was arrested for 3 different incidents involving drinking while on ISP. So, at the age of 25, our inmate was off to the maximum security facility at Hutchinson, Kansas, trying to acclimate to a whole new lifestyle in a single-man cell, doing time.
Hutch is a really bad place to do time. It's just, there's no movement at all.
Just drags.
Yeah, you're just in your cell 24-7, it seems like. It's a horrible place to do time. I did a lot of writing. Me and my second daughter's mom were still together at the time, so I wrote her a lot.
When did you guys split up?
Right when I left Hutch to go to Ellsworth. I got moved out of that cell house to the medium, back over to the cell house I was in when I went to medium, back to the same cell, actually. And a month later, they asked me how many boxes I need, and I said, where am I going, D1? I said, nah, just tell me how many boxes you need. I went and packed out at midnight and told me I was going to Ellsworth.
And so how long were you in Ellsworth?
About a month.
And what was your time in Ellsworth like?
Oh, I moved around quite a bit. I went from, the whole time I was in Ellsworth, I went from F-Pod to G-Pod to H-Pod to D-Pod. I think I spent about 2 weeks in every pod. I liked Ellsworth. I mean, there was a lot of good guys there. I met a lot of cool people. Kind of didn't want to leave at first, but I actually wrote Don Raymond a letter when I was in Hutch.
Okay.
About a month and a half before I left Hutch.
Wrote him a letter?
Yeah.
What did you say in this letter?
I just said people had told me about the program. I don't remember. I actually still have a copy of the letter.
just said, you know, I was trying to get closer to God. I've never really been to church, never really knew anything about it, so I kind of wanted to see what it was like, and, you know, maybe if I could gain something out of it, I could pass it on to my daughters.
Yeah.
I just came back from lunch, and they buzzed my room and told me that I had a meeting in the North Conference room. I'm like, what are you talking about?
So how did that meeting go?
It was about 30 guys in the room. You had to fill out paper, ask us a couple questions, and that was pretty much it.
So it wasn't very personal. It was, no. It was like a big group.
It was a group atmosphere.
Yeah. And so how many of those 30 people, how many people ended up coming?
It's probably about 8.
And you were one of the select few.
Yeah.
Our inmate was chosen to be a part of Brothers in Blue Reentry. He wrote the aforementioned letter, which is an indicator that he truly desires change. But the reality of it is, you don't just show up and get handed a new demeanor on a silver platter. There's good and bad everywhere. But at least he was putting himself in a position where he seemed to readily admit that he wanted good in his life.
So, you come to Brothers in Blue. What was that like?
At first, I thought it was a little weird.
Yeah.
I was actually ready to quit and go back to Ellsworth.
You came, 2 weeks late after the group
signed? Yeah, everybody had signed.
And so what was that like, just being thrown into the mix?
I mean, everybody was talking about this and that from orientation. I was like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I guess it took a little bit to catch up to what everybody was doing, but I mean, you guys weren't really that far, so it wasn't that hard to catch up.
Right.
There's been some good times and bad times. I think Brothers in Blue Weekend, that was a good time. The picnic, I'm looking forward to that. We've had some good discussions in class, and I've learned a little bit, a lot more than what I knew before, but there's still a lot more to learn.
Do you feel like there's been any kind of internal change within you?
Yeah, I've made progress. There's things that I used to do that I don't do anymore. There's actions that I would have taken that I won't take now. And yeah, I think I've matured since I've been here.
Yeah.
Now I'm just in a hurry to get to my single man self.
Yeah.
Get back to just having my own private space and not having to deal with people's drama. And there's a lot of prison politics. There's a lot of BS that goes around in the cell house. And I just kind of like to get away from dealing with certain individuals.
Yeah. Do you see this program as something that's beneficial, or do you?
I think it's beneficial if you actually want it to be.
Right.
If you actually put in the effort, I think it's beneficial. I think it'll help change your outlook on things.
For the most part, though, is the cell house, do you think it's made up of good people, or?
I'd say there's good people in there. I think there's people that probably shouldn't be there.
Now, as far as our group goes, have you seen strides there as far as a lot of the people in there that maybe you didn't think would progress?
In some of them, yeah. In some, I've seen them stride backwards.
Yeah, definitely.
But in a few of them, I've seen them move, take giant steps forward.
It truly is fascinating to watch the progressions and regressions that occur in a prison setting designed to instill spiritual change. It's a constant battle trying to decide the right path and how much you're willing to sacrifice for it. This microcosm of people within Brothers in Blue Reentry continues to surprise and inspire, yet there are also those that simultaneously disappoint. It's easy to let some of the hang-ups deter you in this program, but our inmate learned how to focus on himself and start walking instead of just standing around waiting for change. So what does he plan to do in his future when this chapter is over? His main plan is to go back to college.
I think I want to go back for psychology. I don't know, I like getting into people's thought patterns, their thought process, seeing what makes them tick. I think I'd probably start out going into counseling, then work my way into private practice. Where I really want to go is University of Texas. Not just getting out of Kansas, because, I mean, I like KU. I mean, I like the school, but, I mean, I have a lot of good friends out there.
I still talk to my boy Josh. He's like my best friend. I still talk to him. I mean, I'm sure he's gonna want me to stay in Topeka, but I'm not going to.
Our inmate is steadfast in his resolve that to truly change, he has to get away from the areas in life that drug him down previously. But what about his family, his daughters? Surely he'll attempt a reconnection with them.
I mean, I'm going to get out. I'm going to spend time with them. It's just, I know it's going to be hard at first because they're not going to know who I am. I'm not going to really know them that well, so it's going to be awkward and weird, but I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to give it the old college effort. We'll see how it goes from there. I mean, I'll always be a part of their lives. I'll always do whatever I can to take care of them, but, you know.
Let me be clear. I respect our inmate this week immensely. It's so easy to get critical and speculate what he should do, but that's not for us to do. We can only try to understand him. And what I do understand is this is a man grounded in reality. He doesn't escape from his situation or rely on false hopes. He knows that his position isn't ideal, but it's the position that he's in, so he's going to deal with it. Our inmate has two daughters out there that he wants to be a father to. Alas, it just isn't possible, and he understands that. There's something inspiring in his ability to deal with whatever's thrown his direction and then continually downplay it. And now, through Brothers in Blue Reentry, he's dealing with himself and trying to breed productivity out of the stagnation that is prison. Life's a puzzle, and even though these pieces are tough to get to cooperate, when it's complete, our inmate will be a successful member of society. Thank you for joining us on Real Voices. Please tune in next week for our next installment.